You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
You hear that? Your dog knows spring is coming sooner than you think. Dog walks, dog parks, playing fetch, all the stuff your dog loves to do with you. But the warmer weather also means that fleas and ticks are coming back. Fleas and ticks are in the grass, in the woods, and even on their dog friends. Fleas are an itchy nuisance, can easily get into your home, furniture, and beds, which can be terrible. Ticks are even worse. They're hard to spot, but can carry disease and get your dog really sick. PetMeds has your furry friend protected with the best products to prevent flea and ticks all year long. PetMeds pharmacists connect directly with your vet to save you time and deliver the best products for your pet. PetMeds offers low prices on all flea and tick meds, including NexGard, Simparica, and more. And PetMeds AutoShip helps you save even more with additional discounts on regular shipments of PetMeds, dog food, and other high-quality supplies. So get ready for all the spring fun now. Visit PetMeds.com and use promo code PODCAST to save 40% on your first auto ship order. That's PetMeds.com and promo code PODCAST.
Hey, what's up? Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Roll Pod, an Alabama sports podcast from Bama 247. I am staff writer Cody Goodwin, joined today by not one but two guests. We've got Mike Rodak back on the show, as well as Alex Scarborough, relatively new member of Bama 247. I feel like you've been here for a while now, because you started at March, and now it's April. I know it's really early April, but it feels like you've been part of the family for a while now, Alex.
Yeah, quite a bit going on with Alabama athletics over the last month, so it's gone by quickly.
I have only been covering one segment of Alabama athletics, which is why I wanted us to get on the show today. Because I have no earthly idea what's going on with Alabama spring football, but you guys do. I've been out on the West Coast covering the basketball team that is obviously in the Final Four. They'll play UConn on Saturday. We'll talk a little bit about them here in just a little bit, but I kind of wanted to give, Mike and Alex, you guys the floor of just about spring football, right? Like, there's not been a ton of maybe huge developments based on the things that I've seen. There's been a lot of, I think, little interesting things that have been going on with this team. Another scrimmage is coming up. A-Day is a week away. So, like, before we know it, spring football is going to be over. The transfer portal is going to be back open. And, you know, the team we see now could look very different here by the time we get to May. So I'm going to kind of give you guys the floor here. And Alex, I guess we could start with you. What's maybe been some of the most interesting thing or some of the most interesting things that have been going on with Alabama spring football this last month?
It's still been interesting hearing more and more from the new coaches on staff, just about their overall philosophies. I think learning more about what Kane Womack wants to do with this defense and how it might differ from Nick Saban in terms of what they do, not necessarily playing as much matching man versus zone and eyeing the football. I think it's really interesting. But I think the most compelling storyline this spring has been what the heck is happening at center. Is it James Brockermeyer? What does that mean for Parker Brailsford? There have been some reports out there about him missing some practices for non-health related reasons. Still waiting to get clarity on that. But we already knew before that was starting to come out that James was making some headway at that position. We saw in practice he was running with the ones at some points. So to see that development, which I think was pretty widely unexpected, has been interesting to me. And then what the trickle-down effect of that is going to be for the entire offensive line. You referenced the portal going to reopen here in a few weeks. How quickly does Caden Proctor get into it? How quickly does he land at Alabama? Assuming that is in fact the thing that's going to happen, and where else they look to fill some needs there, maybe another tackle, maybe some interior alignment. The offensive line in general to me has been really interesting now, but I think it's going to be really interesting for the weeks to come.
100%. Mike, what has been super interesting to you when it comes to, you know, covering Alabama spring football? Clearly Alex laid out a lot and we'll dive into a little bit more of it, but I'm kind of curious, what do you think of first when you think of Alabama spring ball?
Well, we kind of been going coast to coast because I was out in L.A. because you were in Spokane alone for the first two rounds. And I was in L.A. with you, you know, for the North Carolina Clemson games. And then when they were celebrating on the court after the Clemson game, I said to Greg Byrne, I said, you guys still have a football team there? Like, it's just it was just basketball. And it's true. Like, it's funny how it's almost an afterthought, you know, these past 2 weeks, Alabama football, just because of where basketball has been. But I am back in the state of Alabama now. And I was there Wednesday night for Kane, and I'll be there tonight for Nick Sheridan, and then tomorrow for the scrimmage. So, this is a pretty busy week for them. And, I agree with Alex. I think the center position is probably going to be the topic of the day here with Nick Sheridan when we talk to him, you know, later after practice. And, I think it's been – the signs have certainly been on – the writing's been on the wall there, you know, where the first day of spring practice, and we're talking to Chris Kapilovic, you know, the new offensive line coach, and emphasis on new, because he's not only new to Alabama, but he's also new to Kalen DeBoer. And that's, I think, a key part of this whole deal. And he's really trying to make the point to us that first day we talked to him that James Brockemeyer, Brock, if you will, is right in the mix in that competition. And I think that was a little bit surprising just because Brockemeyer had been around for 3 years before that and just really never seemed to make too much headway in terms of the depth chart. I don't think he was ever really more than third when he watched, you know, those quarterback center exchanges before every game. And now he's in a position where he could be starting. So he's made a lot of progress. That's something even Tyler Booker said about Brockemeyer when I asked him that day, and said he had a big opportunity ahead of him. You can just sense that something was a little bit off, you know, with the Parker Brailsford situation. I think a lot of people assumed first team all Pac-12 last year, I believe, comes in and, I'm sure got a decent amount of money to come to Alabama, and you'd think he'd be your starting center. And I don't think it really worked out that way, but he's also dealing with a new staff. Like Scott Huff was his position coach at Washington. Obviously Ryan Grubb was the offensive coordinator, and that was initially what was supposed to be the case here. And that switched. And now it's Nick Sheridan at coordinator, and you bring in Kapilovic from Baylor, really Michigan State. And you know, it's just not, the familiarity is not there. So maybe it helps a little bit that Brailsford kind of knows DeBoer's playbook and terminology, but at the end of the day, he's in the room with a new coach and new teammates, and the advantage probably slips a little bit. And he's not the biggest guy either. And I think there's always questions about how he would translate size-wise to the SEC. Not that you're able to get a great look at that in spring. I mean, there are some padded practices, but you know, the physicality aspect is probably not going to show up until he's on the field. But I think right now the big question is he on the field this fall for Alabama, or is he on the field for somebody else? Because he can go back into the portal if he wants to, and there's really no penalty with the NCAA facing that lawsuit in West Virginia that takes away any sort of limitation on multi-time transfers for the next year, basically. You can go and get back into the portal and play immediately somewhere else. So you know, I think that's kind of the looming thing here as far as the spring practice period, is to have one more chance in the scrimmage on Saturday. Obviously, you'll have a pretty big public viewing, you know, on A-Day, but then April 16th, that Monday, there could be a lot of changes to this team. And I don't want to talk for too long, but I guess we can kind of get into, the portal. And I think that's honestly what people are thinking about, not only players, I'm sure, but fans right now are thinking what's going to happen, you know, the second half of this month in April with the portal.
Yeah, no, that's a good point of emphasis that we can get to here in a minute, but I'm kind of curious. So when guys transfer in and out, right, and especially like at a place like Alabama where there's talent all over the place, guys transfer in and, you know, sometimes the guys who are already in the room, like they see that as like, oh, you're coming to take my job, or oh, you're coming to take an opportunity for me. Most times that's the case. My first thought when I started, you know, when we started hearing that Brockemeyer was running with the ones, was that like, okay, like maybe this is a guy that took it personally, that Brailsford was coming in. He's been at Alabama for a few years. Brailsford's just gonna, you know, I think the presumption from a lot of us is that he was gonna come in and take the spot. And Brockemeyer's like, no, like I'm gonna get better. I'm gonna really try to assert myself and you know, try to be, sorry, I'm dealing with allergies here because I've been on the road for, you know, 2 weeks. But no, so like Brailsford comes in and just his mere presence kind of forces Brockemeyer to level up a little bit. Like just the idea that like, oh, like I, like you bring a guy into the room and both guys get better. It's like essentially the idea. But like the more that you guys are talking about this, and Alex, I'm kind of curious, maybe this is a question to ask or a weird question to ask, but it almost sounds like there's, you know, some miscommunication. Maybe there's a little bit of a rub there because Brailsford's not there with Grubb and he's not there with Scott Huff. And, you know, I don't want to assume that there's some sort of friction there, but maybe the door's open that there is. Like, you know, it seems to me like it could be maybe a combination of those two ideas as to what in the world is going on with center right now.
It's a really confusing situation. It's why it's so hard to talk about it until we get some clarity, because of course Huff and Grubb leaving plays a role in this situation right now. I don't think the offensive coordinator change is necessarily going to be a huge surprise to anybody. Everybody kind of knew going into this that there was a strong possibility he was either going to end up the head coach at Washington or was going to end up with a bigger time job in the NFL. So maybe there's more to it than that. It's strange because on the one hand, you're thinking, okay, Brockermeyer is competing for this job. He has a chance to beat out a guy with all these accolades. And then you say, hold on, wait a minute. What was going on last year when they couldn't even get the center exchange right and he wasn't in a position to not just be the starter, but the backup? So has he leveled up his game that much? It's possible. Obviously, it's possible. These guys are young, but it's very confusing. I'm very interested to see what Nick Sheridan says tonight and what Kalen DeBoer says on Saturday, because they, like every coaching staff in the country right now, has to be very careful with how they talk about anybody on their team. Whether it's a guy who's thinking about getting in the portal, whether it's a star, because everything has a trickle-down effect right now. They're being conspicuously silent on the Brailsford front. You try to talk to people in the building. I don't think they want to say the wrong thing because they don't want to spook them and send them to the portal if there's a chance to get him back. So there's a very delicate balance of how do we give this kid the space he needs while also acknowledging the elephant in the room that there's a situation going on here. And again, it's not specific to just the center position. You ask about any position and you get a lot of kind of vague quotes because the implication of the portal is opening April 15th. We don't want somebody going in just because they think the other guy's going to be the starter in the spring. There's a long way to go and roster retention is the name of the game right now.
Yeah. And it's tricky for coaches too, because even if a guy's practicing really well this spring, take a Caleb Odom, which I think players have really talked highly about. If you're Nick Sheridan, you start talking about Caleb Odom in a really positive way, then other receivers in the room might be like, well, why is he not talking about me? Like, am I not having a good spring? So there's so much, and that's just the way of the world right now in college football, is players have that easy off ramp. And, you know, quite frankly, they probably should. That's kind of where I stand on the whole subject, but I haven't. And so coaches need to be very aware of who they're talking about and are they being too positive about this guy. So that's why I think when you hear and you see a lot of these quotes, they always try to go to the entire position room, especially quarterbacks. Like we were talking the other day, Alex, they don't want to talk about any of the backup quarterbacks individually. We're not talking about Dylan Lonergan, and we're not talking about Ty Simpson. We're not talking about Austin Mack. It's all of our guys are having a great spring. Love what we see out of them. And it's you can tell there's a hidden meaning there that they're just trying to keep everybody happy. And I do think that there's going to be some losses in the portal, you know, in a couple weeks here, or less than a couple weeks. So that's just the reality of a new coaching staff coming in. These guys have had at that point 15 practices to kind of feel out where they stand, how they like their staff, their position coaches. And then inevitably there's going to be guys that say, this isn't the place for me. But they're also going to be, I think, aggressive in bringing players in. And that's something that's already, you know, Kalen DeBoer even talked about it with Josh Pate the other day, that just from a pure numbers standpoint, and DeBoer made it pretty clear, they're going to look for offensive linemen and they're going to look for defensive backs through the portal once it opens, just because they need more bodies at those positions. And I think, you know, corner, guard / center, especially if Brailsford ends up leaving, I think are two big ones, but you could probably still use a safety. You could probably still use a tackle. I think it's a legitimate question on what happens with Caden Proctor. It's nothing's official yet. This guy has clearly had some changes of heart over, you know, the months here. So, you know, what exactly happens with him? Does he come in? Is he just given that starting role right away again? Or is it something that he kind of needs to earn back given that he left the team? It makes for a really interesting summer, and it could be a different roster that we're looking at by August 1st than what we're looking at right now.
And while we're on the subject, there's one more thing that happened that could have potential portal implications, which is the Jalen Hale injury.
Yep.
And what is the timeline for him getting back? And because he had such a specific skill set in terms of just being a burner who can stretch the field vertically, if there's somebody in the portal who they think can fit that mold that they don't already have, I know there's a lot of – there's pretty good depth at the position, but because of that specific skill – how quickly they think he could get back. I do wonder if maybe that injury can play a role because, again, we're in this new period where you can just plug a gap like that if it happens. I'm very curious to see there and a bunch of other positions because it's mainly offensive line and specifically offensive tackle and defensive back, specifically cornerback. But if there's a top-level guy at any position that they think they can go get and get better, I don't think they're going to hesitate to do that.
And I'll say a sneaky position, pass rusher. You know, I think that is a spot where you have Q Robinson, you have Keanu Ka. I think they're happy with both of those guys. There's some potential there. They're both veterans. There's some potential in the younger guys they have. But if a guy who's out there goes into the portal who's more of a proven type of pass rusher, why not try to go get him? I mean, Alabama was trying to do it even before Nick Saban retired with Trey Moore, the UTSA guy. And a few other guys that were in the portal as far as edge players, they didn't get them. But I think that is a position, having lost Dallas Turner and Chris Braswell, where you could still make an argument. If you can go get a proven pass rusher, I would do that.
Yeah. No, back when I was covering wrestling, high-level college coaches would tell me all the time, even if you have a returning All-American or returning All-Conference wrestler at a certain weight, and there's another superstar at that same weight who's in the portal, you go do your damnedest to go get that guy, get him in the room, and you figure the rest of it out later. Same thing with all the recruiting trail and all that other stuff. You get that talent in the room, and then you figure out the best way to use it and maximize all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Which I guess one of the other things that I was kind of curious about when it came to the portal conversation, we know Alabama's going to probably go after another tackle, even though Caden Proctor's coming in. We'll discuss that once he's on campus and maybe once he talks to us, if he gets on campus and if he talks to us. We know that they're going to go after a defensive back. I'd like to see them maybe go after another veteran proven corner. We'll see ultimately what they do there. The pass rush, the idea of going after a pass rusher is very intriguing, but I'm kind of curious too, just based on what you guys have heard, when it comes to the portal, what positions are maybe you guys going to be monitoring here in a couple weeks in terms of who might leave the program? Like I know that quarterback's usually kind of tricky there. Brailsford's obviously, we're going to be monitoring that. There's a lot of depth, I think, at both pass rush and defensive line. Could we see guys leave? Have you guys thought about that at all, about which positions you think might be on their way out? Alex, I'll throw it to you first.
Yeah, I think when you talk about the defensive side of the ball, what's going to be interesting to me is guys feeling out where they fit in this defense versus where they fit in Nick Saban's defense. And do they feel comfortable moving forward with that? Because there were different body types. There were different things that they were asking the guys to do. And a lot of that was happening at the outside linebacker position. I think there's going to be a little bit more coverage aspects of things as opposed to pure pass rusher. So I'm really curious to see where they go, if there is some attrition there, and then having to backfill. I think they could potentially get better at that position, as Mike brought up. But the other one, again, not to harp on one position too much, but the receiver position, because of the way A-Day might play out and the way it's played out before, there's always one guy who just kind of blows up. And then we're talking about the trickle-down effect of that, right? What does it mean for everybody else in there? Do they get skished? Do they bring other guys in the portal? And then does somebody decide they want to leave? I think if we're looking at a position that maybe we're not talking a lot about, I think receiver could be one that could get really interesting.
I like that. Mike, what about you?
I agree. I think, I would not be shocked if there's one receiver that leaves, at least. I think that's the way Alabama is recruited. You know, they get a lot of high-level recruits at receiver. When you're a high-level recruit, you want to be on the field. And the receiver position just tends to be sort of guys that want to get out there right away and want to play. And they've had a lot of losses over the last 3 or 4 years since the portal rules loosened, where receivers didn't play in 1 year and then boom, they're gone. So that, again, it's just sometimes it's the DNA of receivers that they want to be out in front and be in the spotlight. And I would not be surprised if there was a loss there. I think defensive line, I agree, of the defense is probably the most likely area where there could be a player or two that leaves. I think they're a little bit heavy from a numbers standpoint there. And if you're, again, trying to add corners, because like, as DeBoer said, you need special teams guys to play. So you need corners to play on special teams. You need guys to get through if there's injuries. You're not playing a defensive lineman on special teams for the most part. So, you know, not to like bring up specific names, but I think you tend to look at guys who've been around for 2 or 3 years that have not played. I think that's kind of the key portal demographic, is players who realize that they probably aren't going to get on the field. And again, maybe they kind of go through the spring with some hope that with the new coaching staff, they were a better fit. But just kind of looking down the list, like there's at least 1, 2, 3 players I can see on that defensive line list I'm looking at right now that would not surprise me in the least. But again, quarterback's going to be the number one position everybody's going to be looking for in terms of what Ty Simpson does and what Dylan Lonergan does. And I think Kalen DeBoer has been pretty high on Jalen Milroe in all of his public comments. And I think, you know, seems to try to make his system work for Jalen and emphasize his strengths. And he's talked about him as a home run hitter with his arm and his, you know, his legs. And that's not necessarily what DeBoer's offense has been. It's been a little bit more of the precision passing game, but if they can make it work with Jalen, I think they will. And so if there was hope from Simpson or Lonergan that they'd be able to make a little bit more headway with the new coaching staff, doesn't seem like that's really happened to this point in the spring. We'll have to see how everybody looks on A-Day when they're, again, kind of out in public. But you have 4 quarterbacks, and none of them are freshmen. I mean, Austin Max, a second-year guy, he's young. He's 17 still. But, you know, it's 3 or 4 guys that are all veterans. They're all second-year guys or further. So at that point in their career, it's like, let's get on the field. And I think for Ty Simpson, especially for him, being in his 3rd year now, if you're looking at this and if you don't transfer now, then you're not transferring until December. And you're sitting out basically a 3rd year without playing. And what does that mean, you know, for your career after that? I think he would be the number one guy to watch.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
I feel mostly caught up on spring ball now. I appreciate you guys. Thank you so much. I've been out here on the West Coast covering basketball. Obviously, they're about to hit the home stretch of spring ball, right? There's a scrimmage, I believe, this weekend. I think we'll be able to watch another practice next week. Do I have that schedule right?
Tuesday,
and then
yep.
A day on Saturday. So yeah, they're about to wrap up spring ball. Then obviously we'll focus in on the portal and see how the roster changes. But, I've been out here on the West Coast covering basketball. So I wanted to end today's show with a short basketball conversation. Alabama plays UConn in the Final Four here in Phoenix on Saturday. I believe it's a 7:49 PM start time locally, 5:49 PM out here in Phoenix. UConn's obviously a juggernaut, right? 35-3. They're the returning national champs. They're the number one overall seed in this year's tournament. I believe they're winning. They've won their four tournament games by an average of 28 points per game, or somewhere around there. They're very, very good, right? They're ranked in the top five in KenPom's both offensive and defensive efficiency ratings. How in the world is Alabama going to beat this team? I'm curious what your guys' game plans are. Alex, I'll throw it to you first. How does Alabama beat UConn? What's the path?
Yeah, it's probably good I go first because I'm going to keep it really simple. It's dance with the one that brung it. It just do what you do. Like, you are a wide open offense, score a lot of points, move the ball through Sears and see what you got. I mean, if you can score the basketball the way they're able to when they're hot, you can beat anybody, and it's including UConn. Do I think it's a long shot, or do I think they should be favored? No, I don't think they should be favored, but they're in this game for a reason. They have the confidence. They're the team we thought they had the potential to be for months and months and months, and finally have realized that. I don't think it's a secret that I think that the ball is going to go through Mark Sears, and I think they're going to win or lose based on how he's able to dictate the offense. If he has a big game, I think they are in the game, but I think it's play with no fear, shoot the daylights out of the ball, and see where you land at the end of the day. Because to knock off a team as good as UConn is, you have to be playing your best ball. And probably at this point of the year, not necessarily overcomplicate anything with wrinkles. You have some days off, but with the travel, the wear and tear, trying to do something completely new feels like probably going the wrong direction. I think they just stick with what they are. And if they're a really good offensive team, I think they've got a shot.
Score more points. I like that strategy. I think that might work. That might work out for them. They, Mike, do you agree? I mean, is it as simple as, you know, this is the team that's lived by the three and died by the three all year. They almost died by the three in the second round, but they have really lived and thrived by the three, especially in the two games in Los Angeles over UNC and Clemson. I thought they shot the ball very, very well. Is it that simple, or what else do they need to maybe worry about, or what would be your game plan if you're Nate Oates?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest question is, you try to double on Klingon, and that's what they tried to do with Baycott early in that North Carolina game. It worked to stop Baycott, but then you had other North Carolina guys who weren't very good shooters who were knocking down their shots, and it didn't really go very well. And then they actually put in the second half of that game, I mean, Grant was on Baycott in more single coverage, and he held up pretty well. I mean, it was about as good as you can hope for. And I think in this game, you know that UConn is better shooting around Klingon between Cam Spencer, Tristan Newton, Stephon Castle. Like, if you start doubling down on Klingon, you're going to, A, get into foul trouble, and B, you're going to lose some three-point battles on the outside. So you might have to kind of concede Klingon and just say he's going to score 20 to 25, but they're all going to be twos. And if we can, on the other end, be shooting threes with Sears and Reitzel and Griffin and try to have a great day in Estrada and have a great day that way, then we're shooting threes, they're shooting twos, and hopefully the math works in their favor. I think that might be their game plan. I think we've heard NATO's talking about speeding the game up as much as they can. Obviously, that's easier said than done, because kind of if you want to be in transition, you have to make a defensive stop. You have to either get a turnover or have a missed shot if you want to run with the ball. Otherwise, the ball is going through the hoop. You're stepping out of bounds. You're throwing it in. You're not in transition. So, I think ideally Alabama – in their minds, gets into more of a track meet with UConn. UConn's also capable of, I think, winning that sort of game. Offensively, they're number one in the country. So there's no perfect solution, but I would imagine Alabama tries to go smaller. I don't know if we'll see that Pringle-Nelson lineup. I think it might just be Nelson at the five, and then try to put a lot of speed on the floor, try to put a lot of shooting on the floor, and try to make it into a game where, again, you kind of concede Klingon, but if you're able to do some things and maybe get him into foul trouble on the other end. If Sears or whoever can drive the lane and get fouled by Klingon underneath, and maybe you force him out of the game and kind of have a few minutes on the floor without him, that might help. But yeah, I think it's a faster, higher scoring game is ultimately going to be the solution for Alabama. I don't think they're winning a 65-62 game against UConn.
Which is funny, because Nate Oates said yesterday, like, we don't want to get into like a 120-118 type game with UConn, because that's they can win that way, right? Like they have shown that, you know,
they can win a lot of ways. That's the problem.
I mean, they're bulldozing through everybody, but like they just, you know, the thing about UConn that Oates made a note of is that, you know, teams will sometimes go on runs on them. UConn will also go on runs, but their runs will be bigger and longer and more sustained, right? Like, best example is 30-0 run against Illinois to start the second half, right? So that was in the Elite Eight game. Like, that doesn't happen in Elite Eight games. So my thinking is basically the same along lines as you, Mike. Like, I think they just need to let Klingon score his 40 because he's probably going to score 40 because Alabama can't stop a big, right? Like, I know that they, you know, did their best on Baycott and they really frustrated PJ Hall the last 2 games. But if Klingon scores 40, cool. Nobody else can score 10. That's the other thing. Like, let Klingon get his, let nobody else beat you. I don't know if that's a viable game plan, but the more that I think about it, it's just like, look, he's probably going to get his anyway. Don't, you know, put too much emphasis, like, i.e. don't get into foul trouble trying to stop him when you know that you're probably not going to. And then just offensively find a way to scheme around it so that you're kind of out of his purview when you decide to take your efficient shots, because you're not going to go in the paint on this guy. Like, against Illinois, I think it was ESPN Stats and Info said that Illinois was 0-19 on shots contested by Klingon in the paint. Like, that is just, you know, and I don't even think if it was just in the paint. I think it was just in general. 0-19 against that guy. Like, just don't try it. Like, just don't go at him. And then when you're trying to defend him, like, yeah, you know, just kind of help off. Let him do his thing. But make sure nobody else beats you, right? Because, like, it is a team game. I know that, like, there are instances where, like, a single player can dictate the outcome of a game. But, like, I have a feeling that if you just let him get his and you find a way to shut down or frustrate everybody else, that might give you the best shot. I don't know if Alabama's defense is built to do that. They've played better over the course of this tournament than they did in, you know, obviously through the month of February, and even into March. But I don't know. That's my thought. I don't know what you guys think of that. Like, we're kind of aligned there, Mike, a little bit, but maybe a little bit more extreme.
I mean, it's like the classic dilemma for a coach. It's like, do you try to take away what they do best and let everybody else beat you? Or do you try to let the one guy beat you and try to take away everything else? I think for a team like UConn, where there's so many options, if you can try to take away different things around Klingon and kind of concede him and just say, we're going to give up what we give up from him, then that might be the better solution. Because I think those other guys are very capable of winning the games themselves. If you do shut down Klingon and double him and you'll try to really frustrate him. I think UConn has too much around him to go with that sort of game plan. So again, we'll see what they do. I think at the end of the day, if they lose the game, it's been a good run for him, to say the least. And that's just kind of is what it is. You ran into a team that is historically good. I mean, this is probably better than last year's UConn team. Just a really, really good team that, again, right now is heavily favored to win it all.
I am curious, though. We'll end on this question. I don't know if you guys know the answer. I don't have the answer in front of me, but, like, you know, a lot of conversation has been made about, you know, Indiana State and Seton Hall, two teams that are in the NIT final, probably should have been in the big dance. Seton Hall has a win over UConn. Has there ever been a year where the NIT champ or NIT, a finalist in the NIT, has beaten the potential national champ? Like, that's kind of cool, right?
Yeah, there probably has. It's a good ESPN stats and info question.
I know who should answer is Greg Sankey with his opinion that the mid-majors shouldn't get as many berths. I mean, that's absurd and has been proven to be so.
I totally understand why he doesn't want mid-majors in. They keep knocking out his mighty SEC program.
I mean, Val Ackerman, the chairman or the commissioner of the Big East, probably has the best case of anybody, because Big East was very mad about Seton Hall, St. John's, and Providence all being left out, which three of them were all projected to be in the tournament. All three of them got left out. So Seton Hall wins the NIT, and it's like, here we are. And Indiana State played Alabama tough. They came to Coleman in November, and they played Alabama pretty tough, and that was a quad one win. I think, pretty sure it still is for Alabama. So that's another good team that I think a lot of people thought should have been in the NCAA tournament too.
Yeah. I know. Well, not expand the tournament?
That's no, the I agree. I'm a John Rothstein guy on that regard, where under no circumstances do not expand the NCAA tournament.
68 is good. It's just the criteria to get to the 68 teams maybe needs a little bit of tweaking or a few more human levers in the room when they make those decisions. That's all I got today, guys. I appreciate you joining me, catching me up on spring ball, and trying to figure out the path to beat UConn. We'll figure out if Alabama can do that tomorrow night. We did record this on a Friday. We'll be back sometime next week to either recap a national championship either Dame playing in Alabama, or maybe they'll go ahead and just stun the world and do the dang thing. We'll see what happens. We'll also catch up a little bit more on spring football next week as well. In the meantime, though, be sure to rate and review the show wherever you listen to your podcast, Apple, Stitcher, Spotify, even our Bama 247 YouTube page. Subscribe to Bama 247 and 247 Sports. We're running a special because we're always running a special, a Final Four special, 60% off. Please come join the party. If not for Alabama's the end of the basketball season, then for the rest of spring ball as well as the portal nonsense that's going to be coming up here in just a few weeks. Mike and Alex, I appreciate you guys joining me. We always appreciate you guys for listening. We will talk to you all again soon.
The wait is over. The Chi returns with new episodes on Paramount Plus.
What brings you to the show?
Opportunity.
Everybody get down! Walk right up to
the side. A new rain is coming to the South Side.
Never should have sent a boy to do a woman's job.
The Chi. New episodes May 10th. Visit ParamountPlus.com/The Chi to get a 50% discount off the Paramount Plus with Showtime annual plan. Offer ends July 14th. Subscription auto renews. Restrictions apply.
Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. Are you still listening? Good. Take a deep breath. You needed a break. This Earth Week, you can live stream 7 national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. So, yes, you can literally stream a stream. Paramount Plus, official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.